Hello and welcome to the Mystic Sisters. I'm Julie.
I'm Amy.
And we've been thinking about a lot of things that we've been seeing on Twitter.
Yeah, well, mostly Twitter commentators now, I suppose.
I guess so. It's just where all the interesting conversation goes on. I feel like Instagram's just pretty things, and then Facebook's kind of just like family things.
Mm-hmm.
So Instagram's or Twitter's where everybody's like thinking and talking about ideas.
It's a lot of it's all discourse since it's such a text-based app. It's not as much of a photo app as Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
So that's where, and it's very journalistic and political. So that's where like philosophical conversations are happening more than on the other social media apps. So
yeah,
I have a love-hate relationship with it. I'm probably addicted to it, but we're all addicted to our phones. You would look pretty strange if you were the only person using your phone the way that you do if nobody else had a phone.
Yeah.
Like, this person really is on here a lot.
Yeah.
So
I can't even think of anything comparable either.
But it's like carrying crack around in your pocket.
It's like carrying crack around.
Anyway.
Okay. But like, so it's interesting because you can like connect with people on there who have like all these different ideas, right? And one of the things that we see a lot of, that it's taken us a while to like parse through like the different sort of, I guess for lack of a better phrase, like types of Christians that are on there. Because it's really interesting. Like when you become a Christian, you're like, amazing, I found this amazing thing. And I was always like, the journey's over. I found Christianity, I'm a Christian. But then you go down the rabbit hole of like the different, I guess for lack of a better word, denominations and like schools of thought and arguments within Christianity. And something that I see all the time on Twitter,
it's called X, but I don't feel like calling it that.
I'll never say that. It's bad branding. But okay, so one of the things that I see all the time on there is this idea that I have thought about a lot, but the idea that you shouldn't follow your heart, that follow your heart is like a modern platitude that is sinful and your emotions can't be trusted. And that if you follow your heart, it will just lead you astray and lead you into like hedonistic pleasure seeking and this like terrible life of sin, right?
You've seen this. Yeah, many times.
Yeah, we've seen this. So I've thought about this a lot. And I guess one of the reasons that it doesn't sit right with me is because I've had personal experiences where I've had a really bad feeling about something or someone, and I've overridden it with logic.
Mm-hmm.
Silence gut, like just blah, blah, blah. And like you rationalize it and try to ignore these like sensations that are coming up from not coming from the mind, but are coming like literally from the gut, from the core of your being,
yeah,
from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of area that are, I think, often signaling to you that something's right or wrong. Often it's a very strong feeling that something's wrong and that you need to get out of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you rationalize on top of that, I think that's when you're led astray. I actually think that when you don't follow your heart and when you don't follow your gut, you're often led into like, maybe not sin, but
a situation that maybe isn't right for you.
Yes.
That eventually you'll need to get out of.
Yeah. So I think there's like, okay, so in, what is it, Luke 17, Christ says, the kingdom of heaven is within you. So it's like, there's a spiritual reality, a spiritual realm within each of us that's living in every Christian. So if that's true, then following your heart, or at least listening to your heart, makes sense.
Yeah,
the God's living within you.
And you could maybe swap heart for intuition,
yeah,
or nous in Orthodoxy. The nous is considered like the seat of the soul, but it's often called the heart, and
yeah,
it's like the eye of the heart is what we're supposed to see with. So I think that's getting at. I also think maybe Hinduism has this concept a little bit with like the third eye. They're speaking to something like beyond the mind, beyond the eyes, like something in like the center of your being. I could be wrong. I'm not trying to be heretical here, but like I do think maybe that is kind of what they were getting at. So yeah, it is good to honor your intuition because we don't always have reasons for everything that come mentally. Like sometimes it's like, that didn't really make sense, but I'm doing this and it actually serves me very well. Like for example, we live in the Rust Belt and you could on paper say all these things that are wrong with this area, right, economically, socially, you know, but then it just like kind of feels right for us to be here. And I had to wrestle with that for a long time.
Well, we tried moving to some place that like checked all the boxes because we're like, well, what makes sense? What do we want in a place? It's like, oh, I want like access to nature and like access, like it's not too far from a major city and like blah, blah, blah. Check, check, check. And we didn't like it there. We moved to a place in upstate New York and we really didn't like it there. And it's like, what? Like something can be objectively right
mm-hmm.
or seem right on paper or seem right rationally and it's not in your heart.
Yeah. You see this all the time with people dating. They're like, yes. They checked all the boxes, but it just wasn't right. And so that also points to like a mystery that humans cannot fully grasp. But like there is a mysterious spirit at play in things that is beyond our rational mind. So it's like super rational, beyond the rational.
Yeah. And it's sort of like a knowing without reasoning. It's like a deep knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like truly like when you love somebody, you don't have to like think about it, right? It's mm-hmm. just like a knowing. It just is.
Yeah.
So
a nice Matrix quote.
Oh. Is that a Matrix?
In the Matrix, the portal, she goes, yes. Being the one is like being in love.
But you just know.
We just watched that right, movie 2 weeks ago, so it's, I guess, fresh in my brain.
Yes. But I think one of the things that, like, reformist types, they give this reasoning why your feelings are not to be trusted. And they'll say, like, oh, modern people, all they do is follow their feelings. Look at this terrible society we have, right? Or they say, transgenderism is people following their feelings. And I actually really disagree with that. I think people who are trans often aren't following their feelings. I think they feel very bad,
yeah,
both before and after they
transition. They're actually trying to solve for a bad feeling.
Yes, I don't think they're like, oh, this feels good, so I'm going to do it. I actually think they feel bad.
Yeah.
And then they often feel bad after they transition as well. So they're, I think, following more of like an ideology or an idea about like who they are and who they should be. And if you ignore your like intuitive, your that deep knowing in your gut, you can end up in a really bad place.
I also want to discern here between like superficial, shallow, surface level feelings and then like deeper feelings.
Right.
It's like someone put it to me once because I'm a painter. It's the difference between watercolor painting and oil painting. Like, I don't know how many people that will make sense to, but water's very like surface and light and hard to lay on thick. And then oil is like really deep and rich and it's made of like deep pigments. So like it's one is like a bit shallow, like, okay, something happened and I got upset and followed that feeling and maybe acted rashly. It's like, yeah, in that case, maybe you shouldn't have honored that feeling and you should have tried to regulate your feeling. But right. That's different than deep knowing and deep feeling on like a situation.
Yeah, it's not really like emotion, maybe a little bit, but like I think there is some distinction.
It's certainly a sensation. Maybe the word feeling has too much baggage. And we need to start saying like sensation. And
yeah.
Between the different types of sensations a person could be experiencing in their body.
Right. It's not,
so, because being embodied is very important. Also, like we have feelings, evolutionarily speaking, for a reason.
Yeah.
The body. If you feel fear, it could be because there's real danger present.
Yeah. And sometimes you can feel fear and there's nothing to fear.
Yes.
So it is true. They're not 100% wrong that like emotions aren't always right.
Yeah.
Or you could feel angry and then later be like, you know what? I understand why that person did that and my anger has dissipated. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not always 100% of like the proper guidepost, but like intuition or like a gut feeling, like your body does contain wisdom. And so to say that like you shouldn't listen to your gut or listen to what is essentially manifesting as a feeling, it's like saying that you shouldn't, like, your body gives you signs in other ways. Like if I was like, you know, gaining a ton of weight, that's my body like giving me a sign that I'm on a bad path, right? Mm-hmm. And I would listen to my body. Or if I like,
yeah, would you not listen to the feeling of like I'm heavy and lethargic,
yeah,
and like, something's wrong?
Just the body manifests.
Right? Yeah.
And also something I don't like about this idea that you shouldn't follow your feelings as well is that like there's if like the Holy Spirit lives inside of us, right? It's like it's kind of like that. It's like
cutting off your connection to God.
God, I have said before, like God's the creator of all things visible and invisible. So he is speaking to you in an invisible way. You might receive signs or messages internally that no one else can see.
Because you have a personal relationship with God.
Yeah.
We all have a personal relationship with God.
Yeah. And then there's also this like interesting thing that you sent me. There was a video going around about how the wisdom of our ancestors is like genetically encoded in us. Like if like our ancestral memories mm-hmm. from our lineage, people who lived before us, can be passed down genetically.
Yeah.
If they went through a trauma or something.
There was a study of rats in a box, and they had two parent rats who figured out how to escape the box. And it took them a certain amount of time. I hope I'm not butchering this. And then their offspring could figure out how to get out of that box quicker.
Yes.
Than their parents. I mean, they think that it was maybe encoded on them.
Right. So like if you have like a bad feeling about something or someone or a situation and you don't really know why. And I think that can be part of the problem is you don't know with your rational mind, like why you're feeling weird about something, but maybe one of your ancestors experienced something similar and it's encoded in you for an alarm bell to go off that that's not going to end well.
Peterson talks about this. That's why we're afraid of snakes.
Yeah.
Because when we, this is evolutionary biology, so maybe it's a little cringe, but when, you know, in the primate world, a snake could really take you out and it would really scare young primates or little primates. So, you know, all of that that's just like encoded on us. So I don't know. I don't really think that evolution is totally at odds with Christianity. I think it's just kind of like a paradox. But
oh yeah, I think that I don't think there's nothing to that.
No,
by any means.
Yeah,
you can see this even with like more. I don't know if you like. You can see families of musicians, right? And like the dad's a musician, the grandfather was a musician. Like everybody's good at music in this like line.
Yeah,
you see that a lot. And like our family has like kind of builders and like teachers
right.
in our line, and that goes back on like in the paternal line. So I think
anybody could really observe that.
Just, yeah, if we share like interests or what behaviors with people in our line. I think in the last podcast I talked about how I see behaviors in myself or tendencies. They're similar to like
your kin.
My kin. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we share that, then why would it not also be the case that we could share like, you know, a sense of direction in other ways,
mm-hmm.
right?
They're beyond the rational mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like in your body.
Yeah.
I think I see this a lot with like certain like types of Christianity. They're very about like the word and what we know and the script and the law. And that is a very disembodied mindset. It doesn't really leave a lot of space for like the sensations we have in our body and different ways of knowing things, different forms of embodied intelligence. And you were talking about the body being intelligent and like telling you when it's sick. And so that, you know, we became Christians, I guess, in our late 20s. So I'm really learning all the different like interpretations of how people apply this. And it's been very interesting. I came out of the new age, which was maybe too embodied.
Yeah.
And not rational enough.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah, exactly.
But so I really don't relate to like the word, kind of like it's written here, sola scriptura type of rationalizing.
They
point to, the Bible says that, right? And it's like, okay.
But we're also embodied beings. And I think a holistic view incorporates things like a gut feeling or an intuition.
Yeah.
And you ignore that. Jordan, she's like, you ignore that at your peril.
It's true.
But it's true.
And you don't want to ignore it. You want to check the facts. Like, okay, does this feeling actually fit like certain evidence that I have?
Right.
Like, and you know, there's just room for nuance. Like, that may or may not.
Honestly, like, I've been in situations where, like, the facts, it all seemed good.
Mm-hmm.
But I had just such a deep feeling of, like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And I think there's,
out of there.
There's something where, like, there was nothing, like, logically, objectively wrong with it. Or at least, it seemed like nothing was wrong on a level that I couldn't deal with. But it just felt so wrong. Like it felt like it wasn't for me. And I think that is God speaking through you. So if just point to the Bible and say, like, you want to have this holistic view in order to like create a life that feels like yours.
Yeah.
And you need those signals, those internal signals that nobody else can see,
mm-hmm.
that nobody else can judge. Like I'm at the end of the day, like I'm the one that has to live in my body.
Yeah.
So if I'm having a terrible sensation about a situation and then I feel better when I get out of it, it's like, maybe that was the signal.
That's probably all the evidence that you need.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah. I can't live like this. It's going to cause me sickness. And I think maybe people ignoring their bodily sensations is what causes greater illness down the line. You just keep ignoring and ignoring. And then like, you know, it might develop into something more physical and painful than it goes beyond the feeling.
Right. Yeah. I think that's true.
I think that if you ignore the warnings, it's like a warning.
Somebody said to me once that they had this like interesting idea where they said, you know, we obviously like and pray to God using our minds, but also like the gut is like praying to the mind. Like it can't speak words, but it's like, listen to me. And like,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like this, like,
well, they're
scientifically speaking, we do have
receptors in our mind and our gut.
Right.
So we have serotonin receptors here and here. And like there's a gut brain that is like proven that you have a gut brain.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah. So I get really upset when I see people just don't follow your heart. Cause I've found that if I ignore my heart, I suffer.
Well, badly.
I think I also saw on the way, or I said on the way here, that people used to just talk this way in like old poetry and old writings, and like, you know, Tolkien wrote like his character saying like, "What does your heart tell you?" And you know, these kinds of things, and it was considered valid.
Well, I always
think it's a kind of a newer idea. I think I don't know where it's coming from entirely,
but it's not legitimate.
I always think of in Lord of the Rings whenever Boromir and Frodo are like, Boromir is about to take the ring, and he says it would, and Frodo goes, "I hear what you're saying." Something it would seem like wisdom if not for the warning in my heart. And I always think about that line: the heart warned him.
Yeah,
like, it sounds wise.
This seems right.
It happens all the time. Heart. People try to psych other people into doing bad things. Like, come on, it's you can hear it. Like,
voice the appeal of the devil,
the appeal of the mind. Just do it. No,
yeah.
Gang, blah, blah, blah. And then like your body is telling you no.
Yep.
So
I don't understand how like these like reformed types can just say, don't listen to your heart. I'm like, oh my gosh, what damage you're doing. You know how many people have rationalized being complicit in evil because they ignored warnings from within their body?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
words can be very tricky or very manipulative.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like truth and it's not.
It's
like,
not.
Yeah. Sharp tongue.
And we need to use all the tools at our disposal to navigate this very complex reality that we live in. Yes. And one of those is your gut and your intuition. And I think that we have like three brains, right? We have like the mind, which is the rational, the thinking, right? The reasoning. And then we have the heart, which is like, you know, maybe what you want. And then the gut is your intuition. It's like your knowing without reasoning, the sensation of knowing without reasoning. And they're all like, they all need to be aligned to not have disease.
Yeah.
Because like dis-ease, you're not at ease. And it's like all your thinking centers are not aligned.
Yeah. Right?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of them are off, if your mind's in it, but your heart's not in it, not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, or if your heart's in it, but there's rational problems, right? We all know people have been like in love with someone who's like unstable.
Yeah.
So there's rational reasons why that's not going to work.
Yeah. Right?
And they love them. Mm-hmm. But then the opposite, like, well, this person makes sense, but I don't love them. So it's like aligned.
Yeah.
Alignment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well said. I don't think I can follow that up.
Sweet. Okay. Well, okay. What else do we want to talk about today? We wanted to talk
All about, you know, mentality overriding your heart and feeling kind of ties into what we've been seeing online a lot, which is fundamentalism. We wanted to talk about how this applies particularly to gender fundamentalism.
Yes.
So my theory is that the gender fundamentalism that you might see in like conservative right-wing spaces is the equal opposite of the gender fundamentalism you see on the left. So this kind of trans ideology that we're seeing, which says things like, if you like to wear dresses and makeup, you're a woman, no matter like what your physicality is a type of fundamentalism. There was a lot of discourse about this girl who liked to catfish and kind of was a tomboy and people were calling her a man.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But that was interesting because it was coming from conservative Christians.
Yes.
So that's fundamentalism.
Yeah.
And then on the, you know, they're really two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
And I guess I just think that at the end of the day, you're just a man or a woman because that's the way God made you. And that's kind of it doesn't matter who cooks and who cleans.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe that wearing makeup automatically makes you a woman. I don't believe fishing automatically makes you a man.
Yeah.
So,
it's like these our society on both sides right now is very obsessed with superficial markers of gender.
There's a lot of identity issues going on.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's true. We don't really know what's a man, what's a woman. And honestly, like a part of it, it's like, yes, biology, there's that. But also there is a mysticism to like who we are.
Yeah.
And to how our femininity, masculinity is expressed. So to try to like put it into some superficial box of like, well, men catfish and women wear makeup, it's like you're still just like not getting it.
And that means the girl who's doing sports is a guy and she should get surgery.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't make sense. Like,
yeah.
There has to be some like flexibility.
Just a little nuance. It's not, I think people get caught up on externals, like externals of like what people are wearing, what people are doing, instead of like, can we talk about people's character and their virtues, which kind of like, not to sound cringe, but like transcends gender. Like, is it not virtuous of her to catfish? Like, well, no, it's fine. Like, it's not a lack of virtue.
It's a lot of like prescriptivist, like boxing in, right?
Yeah.
So the other ideas that we see with like gender fundamentalist types is like, you know, we were talking about how it's like the woman's like only like path is like mother,
Right. The only way she can be saved is through childbirth.
Through childbirth. And, or,
which completely invalidates nuns and infertile women. Exactly. I just don't think that God is that mean.
Right.
But, yeah. Like, well, he would just damn them to hell because they, like, couldn't have children.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a really strange idea.
Yeah.
And so it can't be that because God's obviously created, like, exceptions.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not good.
But it is. Yeah. Like, we all have a path.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there is, I think everybody has a path and everybody has their own path. And there are paths you shouldn't take, and there are paths that are good, but God's creative. There are many paths to heaven.
Yeah.
There's just one path. Like,
I think God has a larger imagination than people do.
Yeah.
And people struggle with that. And I also think in times of chaos, people reach for fundamentalism.
Yeah.
Because they're nervous and anxious, and having like a strictness makes them feel better.
It makes them feel like they're in control. And I've been reading a lot about women who've come out of, they call them like high control religious sects that have gender fundamentalism. And a lot of the times it leads to abusive dynamics because there are these ideas that like the woman can't engage in decision making, like all the decision making falls to the man and he has the final say on everything. And I think that healthy relationships have, there might be a hierarchy, but there's also a synergy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not this like master slave dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just so you do everything I say, which is vulgar. Yeah. And inhumane, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I just think people have like a hard time contending with the fact that like we're all, whatever gender you are, full persons. And it's hard to deal with, like, and I think there is a temptation to like reduce people to just like these specific
caricatures.
Yeah.
Like
people have, I think atomization might play into this. There's all this conversation about like, what makes a man, what makes a woman? Cause
we have broken down kin networks.
Yeah.
And so it's just a lot of focus. And in America, all the focus is on like the individual. So it's another element of that instead of,
I don't know.
Yeah,
people embedded in their social networks.
Right. So it's almost like they're so obsessed with what their like gender role is because they're not embedded in a larger body or a community
yeah.
of people that are offering different things. So like, I think a healthy community, it has like the person who's a good handyman, but then also the person who's like good at finances, and then the people who are nurturing mothers, but then also the women who like to get their hands dirty and like whatever. Like it's, in a community, you can see that we're all like
just kind of working together,
synergistically working together with our different
talents,
and God made us all in His image. So there's like not this prescriptivist one way to be thing.
And there's not so much weight on like one person.
Yes.
So it's like, are you doing this, this, and this, and that's what makes you who you are.
Right.
There's like a weightiness on individuals right now.
Yeah.
That it didn't used to be.
We feel like we have to do and be everything.
Yeah.
And it's because, and this is like part of what is so good about like going to church is because you end up in a community of people where you can see their different talents and you can,
yeah,
you end up see their different interests, and some people are really good at cooking.
It's a body.
Some people,
body of Christ.
Yeah. And you don't get rid of the eyeball, or you don't make everybody into a liver when you also need eyes and hands and feet and like all these different things.
So yeah.
It's like different function.
Going to church is humbling that way because you really see, you really get a dose of nuance and all the different things people go through and have to deal with. And it gives you a lot of compassion for people and like why they're there.
Right. And I can tell that people online, I can tell when people online aren't actually attending church, when they say really rigid things about like how women should be and how men should be. I'm like, you're not in reality with actual people.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of different situations. There's so much variation amongst people and their temperaments and their personalities and their behaviors and their interests that like when you reduce people into these like rigid boxes, what also inspires despair. Because you have women who like are infertile and they're like, oh,
it'll never live up to it.
I'm not going to be a mom. So like, I guess I'm just chopped liver. And it's like, it's a despair narrative.
Yeah.
And
we're going to have someone on our podcast, I think in the next 2 weeks who reached out to me about this particularly because, you know, she's somewhere between Catholic and Orthodox, but also can't have children. And like, she wanted to talk about this topic because you don't fit into their box sometimes of a lot of the things that like the right wing online Christians say.
Yeah.
And it's just been interesting to find out where it's coming from because we were raised Catholic and we didn't have a lot of fundamentalism growing up. And it's something I'm being exposed to in adulthood.
Right.
So I'm actually very glad I wasn't exposed to it as a child.
I think it would have
really messed me up.
Scared me up. And I think encountering it even in adult,
I probably would have thought I needed a sex change or something because I wasn't feminine enough. Because you're never feminine enough. Because these are like ideals and cartoon characters.
Yeah. And
I was not a tomboy. Like, when I think of a tomboy, I think of a girl who, like, likes playing sports. And I played some sports, but I was
in your dress.
I was a tomboy in the sense of how I dressed, because I was really uncomfortable wearing dresses, because I wasn't mature enough yet to contend with the fact that to be feminine is to be vulnerable. And I also didn't have enough life experience to, like, now I know that to be a woman is to be vulnerable, and I have shored up my boundaries to account for that.
Yeah.
So there's this, like, dual thing going on with being a woman where you know you're vulnerable, but you also have to kind of protect that, but also, like, have your boundaries, right? So anyway, I was so young that I didn't, like, I just wasn't comfortable wearing dresses, because mm-hmm. I hadn't grown into what it meant to be a woman, and it felt safer to dress like a boy. And so today, like, on both the left and the right, if being a woman means, like, wearing dresses or not catfishing or, like, these things, they would have said I was trans.
Yeah, you would have been, like, a risk case.
Yeah, and given me, mm-hmm. yeah, or I would have been maybe on the other side of it, forced into feminine expressions that I wasn't yet comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, right? So anyway, like, people are going to develop how they're going to develop. And
yeah. I guess maybe we should have explained what fundamentalism is.
Oh, okay. What do you think fundamentalism is?
How do you define
fundamentalism? I would define fundamentalism as, like, almost like dogma. Like, well, it's not even dogma. Dogma is what is laid down as incontrovertibly true. But I do think objective truth exists. Fundamentalism is, can we look it up? I want to look up the definition.
I think fundamentalism is, yeah, that's interesting. I know that that's what I'm starting to see here, but I don't know.
Well, it says a form of religion, especially Islam or Protestant Christianity, that upholds belief in this strict, literal interpretation of scripture.
Okay, yeah.
So it's strict and literal. So okay. That what is the opposite of strict is flexible. So it leaves very little room for, like, nuance.
Right.
In my opinion, reality.
Right.
Yeah. Reality itself is a bit more malleable and flexible than we think. Not to a toxic degree, but
yeah, I think that's right. It's true.
It's describing the origins of these beliefs, which is like a strict reading of just of the text.
Like, says it right here.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's also this whole universe and world that God gave us to learn Him.
Yeah.
And it, like, I guess I just see the book as, like, a good guide and something that's holy, but also supplements a greater reality. That there's a lot of things not in the book.
There are the areas of life that were purely experiential.
Yeah. Like,
that I learned through experience. And we should all be able to say that.
Right.
It's also, like, I said this to a Protestant friend once, who was sola scriptura, that there were probably a lot of conversations Jesus had that weren't recorded. They're not in here. Like, think of all the talking and things he did that just couldn't physically get copied down,
or right.
private conversations he had. So,
yeah, like, we don't have a direct transcript of, like, every single thing he said.
Yeah.
We got a podcast of him. We don't.
Yeah. There's a lot of things people that aren't recorded that we could have asked him about. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot
to this universe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess see it a little more dimensionally and widely.
Right.
I'm sure someone will call us heretical, but
it's okay. We like.
I checked with my priest. He agrees with me. So
subscribe to our Substack. It's mysticsisters.substack.com.
Well, thank you for joining us.